Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Cardinal Ray ha parlato della guerra.
Cardinal Ray spoke about the war yesterday. They did not let the Patriarch enter into Gaza, as they had promised. And yesterday, children were bombed. This is cruelty. This is not war. I wanted to say this because it touches the heart.
The Pope has died. Yesterday, on Easter Sunday, he once again called for a ceasefire in Gaza. He was also a fierce voice for immigrants. We'll look at his life and legacy with Reverend Munther Isaac in Bethlehem, Marie Dennis of Pax Christi International, and Robert Ellsberg, editor of Pope Francis's book, A Stranger and You Welcomed Me, A Call to Mercy and Solidarity with Migrants and Refugees. But first, Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen has just returned from El Salvador, where he met with Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father whom the Trump administration mistakenly sent to El Salvador's notorious megaprison, but who, despite a Supreme Court ruling, has refused to return him to the United States.
His conversation with me was the first communication he'd had with anybody outside of prison since he was abducted. He said he felt very sad about being in a prison because he had not committed any crimes.
We'll also speak with Israeli-American Columbia student Josh Drill about the detention of a fellow student, Mohsen Madawi. Josh writes, as Israelis in New York were horrified by ICE's detention of one of our Palestinian partners in peace.
We cannot allow these deportations to happen. They threaten our future. Only together can we stop these deportations. Only together can we stop the bloodshed. And only together can we end the military occupation and create a reality of peace.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pope Francis has died at the age of 88. The Argentinian-born Jesuit had led the Catholic Church since 2013, when he made history by becoming the first pope from Latin America and the first Jesuit. He made his last public appearance Easter Sunday when he repeated his call for a ceasefire in Gaza, saying the situation was dramatic and deplorable. In November 2023, Pope Francis accused Israel of committing terrorism after Israel attacked a church in Gaza.
A mother and her daughter, Ms. Nahida Khalil Antan and her daughter, Samar Kamal Antan, were killed and others wounded by the snipers as they went to the bathroom. The house of Mother Teresa's nuns was damaged. Their generator hit. Some say it's terrorism. It's war. Yes, it's war. It's terrorism. That is why Scripture says that God stops war, breaks bows, and breaks spears. Let us pray to the Lord for peace.
Pope Francis was also a vocal champion for the poor and marginalized, often spoke out about the climate crisis and against the death penalty. On Thursday, the Pope traveled to a prison in Rome to meet with dozens of prisoners as part of a Holy Thursday ritual. The mayor of Rome, Roberto Galtieri, said today, "Rome, Italy, and the world are mourning an extraordinary man, a humble and courageous pastor who knew how to speak to everyone's heart," unquote. On Sunday, Pope Francis briefly met with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance in February before he was hospitalized. The Pope openly criticized the Trump administration's attacks on migrants. The Pope wrote, quote, "The act of deporting people who in many cases have left their own land for reasons of extreme poverty, insecurity, exploitation, persecution, or serious deterioration of the environment damages the dignity of many men and women and of entire families and places them in a state of particular vulnerability and defenselessness, unquote. We'll have more on Pope Francis later in the program. We'll speak with a representative of Pax Christi. We'll speak with Robert Ellsberg, who edited Pope Francis's book. And we'll speak with the pastor, Munther Isaac, in Bethlehem. In Gaza, Israeli forces have killed at least 39 Palestinians in the past day as its relentless and indiscriminate assault continues. The displacement camp of Al-Mawasi near Khan Yunis, a supposed safe zone, has seen heavy casualties. Meanwhile, the Palestine Red Crescent Society has condemned an internal probe by the Israeli military into the killing last month of 15 first responders in Gaza by Israeli fighters. Israel blamed a so-called operational misunderstanding for the mass shooting and burying of the aid workers along with their fire truck and ambulances. The Palestine Red Crescent Society is calling for a UN-led independent investigation into the apparent war crime. The U.S. Supreme Court's temporarily blocked the Trump administration from expelling another group of Venezuelans under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 in an unusual move. The court issued an emergency order Saturday morning at 1 a.m. after the ACLU filed a petition warning the Trump administration was preparing to expel more Venezuelans without due process under the rarely used wartime act. Two justices dissented from the order, Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas. A federal judge has ordered the abducted Tufts doctoral student, Ramesa Ozturk, be transferred from a Louisiana immigration jail back to Vermont by May 1st. Ozturk, who's originally from Turkey, was arrested near her home in Somerville, Massachusetts, on March 25th, was transferred to three different locations, including Vermont, before being sent to Louisiana. She was targeted for co-authoring an op-ed critical of Tufts' response to pro-Palestinian campus protests. Meanwhile, a Minnesota hospital worker who recently became a father to a baby with special needs has been detained after having his student visa revoked without notice. Aditya Wahyu Harsono, an Indonesian national, is married to a U.S. citizen. His student visa was valid through June of 2026. He has a pending green card application. Harsono frequently posts messages of support for Gaza on social media and runs a small nonprofit selling art and merchandise to raise money for aid to Gaza. More nationwide demonstrations took place over the weekend to protest President Trump. Some of the largest rallies took place here in New York as well as in Washington, D.C.
And if you folks think here today that you're safe, they're just coming for the weak, the powerless, the students, the immigrants. They're not. They're coming for anybody who stands up against them. Law firms, universities, anybody who resists, they come for. So do not be misled. Do not be mistaken. This is happening here in our country today. Fascism.
U.S. airstrikes on Yemen's capital Sana'a over the past day have killed at least 12 people, wounded 30 others, according to reports by Houthi media. A separate series of U.S. attacks on Saturday targeted Yemen's Hodeidah's port and airport. This comes as the death toll rose to at least 80 from a major U.S. military assault on the Ras Issa port on Thursday. The deaths included at least five humanitarian workers. The U.S. has been continuously bombing Yemen since mid-March after Houthi fighters vowed to resume targeting Red Sea ships tied to Israel's war on Gaza. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned of the growing risk of regional escalation and called for utmost restraint. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is facing mounting criticism on a number of fronts. The New York Times reports the former Fox News host shared sensitive information about U.S. plans to strike Yemen on a second group chat on the Signal app. Participants in this chat reportedly included Hegseth's wife and brother. Meanwhile, three top aides to Hegseth were fired last week under questionable circumstances, and a fourth former Pentagon official, John Ulyatt, who just resigned as the Pentagon's chief spokesperson, has written an opinion piece in Politico saying it's been a, quote, month of total chaos at the Pentagon, unquote. The United States and Iran held a second round of nuclear talks in Rome and have agreed to meet again next week in Oman. Both sides report progress has been made. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, spoke after the meeting.
There's no reason for too much optimism. We cannot say that we are really optimistic. We must be very cautious. But there is no reason for much pessimism either. We must walk a middle path, reasonable and calm.
In related news, Reuters reports Israel has not ruled out attacking Iran's nuclear facilities in the coming months. The New York Times recently reported President Trump pushed back against an Israeli plan to attack Iran in May. Pakistan has expelled some 80,000 Afghans ahead of an end of April deadline set by Pakistani authorities. 2 million more Afghans who've taken refuge in Pakistan are expected to cross back into Afghanistan in the coming months in a policy that's been sharply criticized by aid groups as Afghanistan faces a dire humanitarian and human rights situation. Russia launched nearly 100 drones overnight in Ukraine. After a 30-hour Easter ceasefire ended, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced the unilateral ceasefire Saturday, but Ukrainian officials accused Russia of repeatedly violating it. The Democratic Republic of Congo has suspended the party of former President Joseph Kabila and moved to seize Kabila's assets, accusing him of high treason for his alleged ties to the Rwanda-backed M23 fighters. The M23 have seized two major cities in eastern Congo, Goma and Bukavu, killing over 7,000 people and displacing another 1.2 million since the start of the year. And in news from California, former Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee has been elected mayor of Oakland. Lee had served in Congress from 1998 until this year. In 2001, she was the sole Congress member to vote against giving President George W. Bush expansive powers to use military force in retaliation for the 9/11 attacks. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a moment, we're going to talk about the life and legacy of Pope Francis. But we begin today's show with Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, who's just returned from a trip to El Salvador, where he met last week with Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father whom the Trump administration says they forcibly transferred to an El Salvador notorious mega prison last month by mistake. Van Hollen shared a photo of the two seated together at a table in what appears to be a hotel restaurant. Senator Van Hollen traveled to El Salvador last Wednesday in a push for Abrego Garcia's release, but had initially been barred from having any contact with him. Abrego Garcia's wife, Jennifer, celebrated the meeting, saying in a statement, "My children and my prayers have been answered." Abrego Garcia lived in Maryland for almost 15 years after fleeing gang violence in El Salvador. He's a sheet metal worker. Following Van Hollen's trip, four Democratic lawmakers, including Congressmembers Maxwell Frost of Florida, Yasemin Ansari of Arizona, have arrived in El Salvador, where they intend to continue pressuring for Abrego Garcia's release. For more, we are joined by Senator Chris Van Hollen. Senator Van Hollen, welcome back to Democracy Now! The huge news of the day is the Pope has died. Two of his major issues, once again just yesterday, Easter Sunday, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. You went to the border there, deeply concerned about Israel's assault on Gaza, and his deep concern for migrants. You just came back from El Salvador, where you met with Abrego Garcia. Why don't we start there? What exactly happened?
Well, Amy, I'm glad you mentioned the Pope. We're all going to miss him. He was a Pope for all of humanity, and Pope Francis was a beautiful soul. So when I met with Abrego Garcia, my main purpose was to let him know that his wife and his kids loved him and that they were fighting for his return, and to let him know that his sheet metal workers union and millions of people in the United States who believe in the Constitution of the United States were fighting for his return and for due process. He spoke about the conditions that he'd experienced, the trauma of having been abducted off the streets of Maryland, trying to make a phone call from the Baltimore Detention Center. They said it was from Baltimore, without being allowed to do that. And of course, then ending up first in the notorious Cecot prison. So it was of course, emotional to hear about the trauma he's experienced. I told him we were going to keep fighting for him. I met with the vice president of El Salvador and said, you really should not be complicit in this Trump administration illegal scheme. And so we will keep fighting for his constitutional rights, because if we deny the constitutional rights for one person, we threaten them for everybody.
So can you tell us exactly what Kilmer said as you met at the hotel? And how is it that you got it totally turned around? First, you're met by, what, Salvadoran soldiers? You're told you can't meet with him. And then just before you left, they brought him out?
Well, first I met with the vice president, and I asked if I could meet with Abrego Garcia. He said no. I said, if I come back next week, can I meet with Abrego Garcia? He said no. I asked if I could call Abrego Garcia. He said no. And so the next day, I tried to visit CECOT, which is this notorious prison, and was stopped by soldiers 3 kilometers short of the prison, and they told me they'd been ordered not to allow me to proceed. I had a number of press conferences in El Salvador with a lot of local press, and I called out this sort of horror of this person having been abducted and denied his constitutional rights, and made the point that El Salvador is violating international law, because international law requires that someone like Abrego Garcia be able to make contact with family, with lawyer, with their lawyers, with others. And so as I was really preparing to leave on Thursday night, we got a call saying that they had relented and that I could sit down with them. And in my conversation, which lasted probably over 40 minutes, we covered a lot of things, from his abduction to the conditions he was experiencing, and many other things. So it's hard to sort of encapture all of that. But the bottom line was, he had been traumatized by what happened. He said it was his family, thinking of his family, that gave him the strength to go on. And I think the fact that he learned for the first time that people in America were fighting for his constitutional rights also gave him additional strength.
I want you to explain how much money Bukele is getting, this country of El Salvador is getting, for imprisoning hundreds of men. We don't know what their crime is, if there's any crime at all. But Bukele said on social media about your meeting, now that he's been confirmed healthy, he gets the honor of staying in El Salvador's custody. He also wrote, Kilmer Abrego Garcia miraculously risen from the death camps and torture, obviously mocking. He goes on to say, now sipping margaritas with Senator Van Hollen in the tropical paradise of El Salvador. You've called this Margaritagate. Can you explain what happened and Bukele's, to say the least, cynical remark?
Well, sure. This was, it shows how far Bukele and Trump will go to deceive people and try to change the story. Because what happened was this: when I first sat down with Kilmer Abrego Garcia, if you look at the first photos, you'll see a glass of water and a cup of coffee. As we were speaking, the government folks, Bukele's folks, ordered the waiters to bring these 2 glasses that were filled with liquid, looked like margaritas because they had either salt or sugar or something around the rim. We of course did not order them. They brought them to the table. If you looked at the one in Kilmer's glass, the liquid was actually a little lower than mine to try to create the appearance that he actually drank it. All of this is a deception. As I pointed out, if you were really Sherlock Holmes, you would see that the sugar, salt, or whatever it was around the rim, that there was no gap in it. So obviously no one had a sip. But this goes to the big lie being told by, you know, Bukele and Trump and others to try to create the impression that this person who was in one of the most notorious prisons in El Salvador and now is still very much in detention and in a news blackout is somehow being treated fairly. So these are the lengths they will go, Amy, to try to create this deception, this illusion. They actually wanted to have the meeting by the pool of the hotel. We negotiated away from that, but it was pretty clear what their plan for deception was. And, you know, I think they really bungled it because they did it in such a blatant way that I'm telling you what happened and we're calling it out. And what it demonstrates is what a big lie they will tell.
I know you have to go 15 seconds. How do you see Kilmard coming home? What is your demand and why is this so important to you, Senator?
So two things. Number one, when you have the Trump administration flagrantly violating court orders, I do think at some point, the court is going to have to find the Trump administration lawyers in contempt and sanction them, number one. Number two, we need to keep pressure on El Salvador. I'm going to be talking later today to some officials in the state of Maryland. You know, El Salvador has seen, you know, more American tourists go in there. My view is that American tourists should not be visiting El Salvador when they're participating in this illegal scheme with the Trump administration. State pension funds can look to see whether they want to divest from any companies doing business in El Salvador. So there are ways to put pressure on El Salvador here. And the reason this is all so very important is because when you deny constitutional rights to one person, you are threatening them for every single one of us. That's why this case is so important. If the Trump administration gets away with violating his constitutional rights and violating constitutional orders, court orders, you know, we are already in a constitutional crisis, but it's getting worse by the day.
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, thanks so much for being with us. Democratic senator has returned from El Salvador after meeting last week with Kilma Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father, who was sent to the notorious Secot mega prison last month by what the Trump's Homeland Security Department admitted was an administrative error. The lawyer who admitted this in court from the DOJ has been fired. When we come back, the Pope has died. Yesterday on Easter Sunday, he once again called for a ceasefire in Gaza, was a fierce pro-immigrant voice. We'll look at his life and legacy. Stay with us.
Por la cintura cósmica del sur, piso en la región. Más vegetal del viento y de la luz, siento al caminar toda la piel de América en mi piel, y anda en mi sangre un río que libera en mi paz su caudal. Sol de Alto Perú, Bolivia, estaño y soledad, un verde Brasil, besa mi Chile, cobre y mineral. Subo desde el sur hacia la entraña América y total, pura raíz de un grito destinado a crecer. Ya está ya.
Canción con fotos, performed by the late great Argentine singer Mercedes Sosa. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman. Pope Francis has died at the age of 88. The Argentinian-born Jesuit had led the Catholic Church since 2013, when he made history by becoming the first pope from Latin America and the first Jesuit pope. He made his last public appearance yesterday, Easter Sunday, when he repeated his call for a ceasefire in Gaza, saying the situation was dramatic and deplorable. The Pope briefly spoke, then had Archbishop Diego Ravelis read his Easter message.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buona Pasqua.
Dear brothers and sisters, happy Easter.
Maestro.
I ask the master of ceremonies to read the message.
Sono vicino alle sofferenze dei cristiani.
I express my closeness to the sufferings of Christians in Palestine and Israel, and to all the Israeli people and the Palestinian people. The growing climate of anti-Semitism throughout the world is worrisome, yet at the same time, I think of the people of Gaza, and its Christian community in particular, where the terrible conflict continues to cause death and destruction, and to create a dramatic and deplorable humanitarian situation.
The Pope's statement Sunday echoed his past comments. In 2023, on his December 17th birthday, the Pope appealed for an end to the terrorism of war.
And let us not forget our brothers and sisters suffering from war in Ukraine, Palestine, Israel, and other conflict zones. May the approach of Christmas strengthen our commitment to open paths of peace. I continue to receive from Gaza very serious and painful news. Unarmed civilians are being bombed and shot at. And this has even happened inside the Holy Family Parish compound, where there are no terrorists, but families, children, and sick people with disabilities, and nuns. A mother and her daughter, Ms. Nahida Khalil Antan, and her daughter, Samar Kamal Antan, were killed and others wounded by the snipers as they went to the bathroom. The house of Mother Teresa's nuns was damaged. Their generator hit. Some say it's terrorism. It's war. Yes, it's war. It's terrorism. That is why Scripture says that God stops war, breaks bows, and breaks spears. Let us pray to the Lord for peace.
Pope Francis was also a vocal champion for the poor and marginalized and spoke out often about the climate crisis and against the death penalty. On Thursday, the Pope traveled to a prison in Rome to meet with dozens of prisoners as part of his Holy Thursday ritual. On Sunday, Pope Francis briefly met with Vice President J.D. Vance. In February, before the Pope was hospitalized, he openly criticized the Trump administration's attacks on migrants. The Pope wrote, quote, "The act of deporting people who in many cases have left their own land for reasons of extreme poverty, insecurity, exploitation, persecution, or serious deterioration of the environment damages the dignity of many men and women and of entire families and places them in a state of particular vulnerability and defenselessness," unquote. For more, we're joined by three guests, the Palestinian Christian theologian Reverend Muntha Isaac in Bethlehem, Marie Dennis, director of the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative at Pax Christi International, and Robert Ellsberg, publisher of Orbis Books, editor of Pope Francis's book, A Stranger and You Welcomed Me, A Call to Mercy and Solidarity with Migrants and Refugees. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Thank you so much for joining us. Marie Dennis, let's begin with you. The life and legacy of the Pope, if you can talk about it.
Yes, thank you so much. What a gift he has been over these years. From the very beginning, both his way of life, his own witness, and his words have pointed in the direction of peace, of mercy, of nonviolence. Pope Francis, as many of us remember, immediately after he was elected, gestured by even what shoes he was going to wear and by where he was going to live and by what car he was going to ride in, his own personal commitment to be close to those who were poor and marginalized in our world. And he has continued that throughout his papacy.
Talk about where he took the church when it came to LGBTQ issues, when it came to abortion. He just went to a prison to visit with prisoners, apologized for not washing their feet on Thursday, but said he was not well. If you can talk about all these issues.
Of course. Pope Francis, I think it's important to begin by saying that Pope Francis began when he addressed almost any issue, he would begin with experience, with the experience of people at the margins who were on the receiving end of whatever form of violence or rejection was being exercised. So, for example, with migrants his first gesture was to go to meet with migrants, to understand their journeys, to understand what motivated them to leave home. When he was challenged by those who were abused by priests and others in the church, he listened to the survivors of that abuse. He listened to LGBTQ representatives, people who were on the receiving end of the exclusion of LGBTQ in our church. And he began to shift his own understanding